Okay, so in December, you were traded by the Reds for Bill Henry, Lou Jackson, and Lee Walls, who was a former Pirate.
Right.
So now with the Cubs, you were managed by Lou Boudreau, and you had a I think pretty decent year. Huh? 20 after the hand injury, you had 21 home runs, 64 RBIs, and hit for 238.
That was a time when they had the 9 roving managers.
Yeah, they called them the College of Coaches. I wanted to ask you about that. That
That's what it
experiment.
was. And if you know, and if a manager liked you, you played. You don't, and
What was the idea behind that,
I
you
have
know?
no idea. I have no idea what their thinking was.
Well, it didn't seem to last long, but now some of the players you had then, if you could tell us a little bit about like Ernie Banks, Ron Santo, Richie Ashburn, Don Zimmer.
They're all great, great ball players. Okay, and Zimmer was. He's one that got hit in the head in minor league, Mobile, and
He's a metal plate in his head, didn't he?
and he had plates in his head, and he looked like Popeye.
Yeah.
Okay, and Jerry Lynch, and or no, Ron Santo, good little looking third baseman. Okay, who else did you mention?
Ernie Banks and Richie Ashburn.
Richie Ashburn. Well, Richie was my roommate with the Cubs, and also my roommate with the Mets. When we went on a road trip,
Sure. Well, you lucked out there, it sounds like.
and the older players talk baseball. I don't know whether these players talk baseball in here. Like I said, in the minor leagues, it was so much fun because your family you're more together than you are in the major leagues. I always said more fun in the minor leagues than you have in the major leagues, but. Santo was a great ball player, okay. Temple was, like I told you.
He suffered, Ron Santo suffered from diabetes as
Right,
well in his later
yeah,
years.
he died young, okay. Ernie, my kids loved Ernie. Every time we get off the plane, my kids would run to Ernie, wouldn't come to see me first. That was funny, but he was a great guy.
Did your
Yeah.
kids have all your baseball cards too?
Yeah. Let's play two. Let's play two.
Yeah.
That was his famous line.
Right.
Warren, let's play two. He loved baseball. He
Yeah.
loved baseball.
Now he was played shortstop at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. But when I was fighting for him with the home run title in 58, if you go back to his record and my record, okay, I hit 26 home runs on the road and 9 in Ford Field.
Fort Field is a tough place. Now that,
Tough.
how did you? I was going to ask you. I meant to earlier about Kiner's Corner and Greenberg Gardens.
If ever left that up for me, I would have hit 50 home runs.
How was it doing for the Pirate pitchers at that time? Eh?
That's why I took it away.
Yeah.
I took it away. But Ernie had a spot in left center field. I don't care if the wind was blowing in a gale, the ball would just go right over that wall.
So as during that season, your second you were played for the Cubs in 1960, and in 61, in May, early in the season, you
May
got
7th.
traded to the Braves, and that was a really good move for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was second to Banks in home runs that year, and I'm not playing. And we're in Chicago, and the two outfielders ran together, and I'm on the bench.
The Cubs outfield.
Two outfielders ran together, and both of them are laying out on the ground. Boudreau comes running in. He was managing then. He said, "Don't you want to play? Get out there." Oh boy, that's the worst thing you can do to a player. Okay, and I couldn't wait, so I got back into the dugout, and I went over to him. I said, "Don't you ever do that to me again." I said, "I've never shown you up, and I don't ever want you to show me up." I says, "I love to play this game, but all you had to say to me is, 'Frank, get out there.' That's all you had to say."
Well, what were
I
you?
have no idea why he did this. Okay, well, maybe because I wasn't rah-rahing on the bench like I usually do. because it wasn't planned. Okay. So after the game, he came over to me and he says, I apologize. And I says, okay. But, you know, I don't care if you apologize or not. It sticks in the back of your mind. Okay. And then we're out in Los Angeles. Drysdale's pitching. Eighth inning. He said, Thomas, get a bat. Get a bat. And going up the steps. He says, what time do you have breakfast in the morning? I says, probably about 10 o'clock, 10:15. He says, how about coming down a little earlier? He says, John Hall and I want to talk to you. And I said, okay. I come down, 9:30. Sat down at the table. Waitress come over and took our order. And while we were waiting for the order, Holland says to me, what's going to be the problem? I said, John, no problem at all. I said, I'm second in banks and home runs, and I can't play on this ball club. I said, there's something wrong. He goes, a check on the table for $1,000. I looked at him, I laughed. I said, don't think you're going to buy me. I said, I signed a contract with you to play baseball, not to sit on the bench. Yeah. And he went on, I said, I don't want it. He said, give it to your wife. I said, no, I don't want it. Sticks in my shirt. He said, if your attitude changes, he says, at the end of the year, he says, I'll double that. Sure enough, he gave me another $2,000. I said to him when he gave me the $2,000 check, I said, if I hear from you in the wintertime and you've cut my salary, I said, you're going to hear from me. Sure enough, they cut me $8,000. I sat down and wrote him a 10-page letter. No sooner he got the letter, he was on the phone, called me, someone was here in Chicago. Okay, so I went to Chicago. I'm walking in, he's behind me. And I said, you got my letter? He says, yeah. And I said, well, what do you think? He said, you're right. Everything you said in there is right. He said, you told me that you were going to do that if I cut your salary. And he says, I'll take the $3,000 back and won't cut your salary at all. And I said, you know, you try to buy me. But why? You know, that's the way general managers are. But he was very honest. You know, that's why I liked him.
Well, in May of 61, well, let's just back up a little bit then. So at the Cubs, like, why do you feel, did you feel that your thumb was back to where it should be at that point?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why do you suppose, I mean, you know, they were a seventh place team those years. And why do you think they weren't playing you?
You try to answer that.
I that's why I'm asking you. I tried. I looked at it. I can't figure it out.
I have no idea.
I mean, I looked at their, you know, who was on their roster at that time.
That's why I said, that's why I said I was second in banks and home runs and couldn't play in this ball club. Something wrong. And then I went to Milwaukee.
And Lou, you went to Milwaukee in May.
I had two home runs. I mean, I traded for Melrose.
Melrose, yeah.
Okay, I hit two home runs for the Cubs. I went to Milwaukee. Okay, I ended up with 27 home runs, 25 with the Braves.
Yeah, .284 average,
right,
too.
Right.
I'm telling you, you just had a fantastic year with Milwaukee.
Right. Then, that's when we hit the four home runs. That was in June, July. He says, I'm going to sign you for next year. I looked at him. You have the guy's name down there?
John McHale?
Yeah, John McHale. So we want to sign you for next year. I looked at him. I says, this is July. I says, I may go bad and you'll be sorry. I may go good and I'll be sorry.
Well, look at today's players.
I said, but I'll sign before I go home. Okay. 2 weeks before the season's over, calls me in his office. He says, we want to sign you for next year. I said, John, I'm going to ask you one question before we do anything. What are your intentions for me for 1962? And his answer to me was, you will be our left fielder. I think, as I look back, I think he had an agreement with the general manager of the Mets.
George Weiss.
George Weiss. You sign him, and then we'll take it from there. So I said to John McHale, I said, I'll tell you what, John. If you're telling me the truth and you're being honest with me, then I'm going to be your left fielder. You bring out whatever contract you want me to sign, and I'll sign it. I can't be any more fair than that. Brought the contract out. That was in September. November, I'm up hunting. My wife gets a call from John McHale. Said, we just sold it to the Mets. I called him 4 times. Never returned the call. I've never seen him since. Never heard from him. Never saw him. And that was the story with the Braves.
These guys, these general managers, it sounds like they were all cut out of the Branch Rickey book.
They all were. Every single book. One of them. Every single one of them.
Just going back on the Braves a little bit before we go to the Mets, because that was another big phase of your career. But, you know, you played with some fantastic players on the Braves. Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, Joe Adcock, Spahn, Lou Burdett, Roy McMillan, Eddie Casco, Frank Bowling.
Wow. So great team.
Yeah, yeah.
The pitching was bad.
With Spahn and Burdett?
Well, you had them, and, you know, and you had a couple other guys there. But, you know, Don McMahon was my roommate. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
he was an excellent reliever.
Great guy. I mean, he said, well, we're going to movies today. Because I'd never, you know, very seldom did I go to movies. He said, let's go to the movies. He said, we got to take your mind off the game. Let's go to the movies. I said, okay. He was a great guy. He died young, too. Okay. But we had a bet with Joe Torre. And, yeah, it was just a sad season, I've got to tell you.
Well, they came in fourth. With all that talent, they came in fourth. Right. And the manager was Chuck Dressen and then Bertie Tebbets.
Right.
So anyway, they had a trade. It was in the offseason, November 28, where there was a big, let's see, there was, this is where the Mets sent Gus Bell back to the Braves.
For me.
For you, yes.
See, I didn't go in the expansion club, okay? You know, when they
had the draft.
When they had the draft, right. I was traded after that.
Right.
Okay. But still, I was an original Met.
Yeah.
And, you know, hit 34 home runs, which is still a record as an expansion club team. And I don't think that record is going to be broken.
You were, you were their offense. There was 94 RBI. You hit 266. They lost 120 games that season.
But you know about that?
And it wasn't no fault of yours.
We lost 51 games by one run in a 7th, 8th,
Isn't
and 9th.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And if we had won those 51 games, we'd have been right in the thick of it.
Well, you know, they had some awful... It was a real mix. They had a lot of old veterans, older players, and bunch of young
ones. Hodges got hurt in spring training and he never played after that. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we got Thronberry, Marvelous Marv.
What was he like as a fielder and player?
When he stood and took his stance at the batter, he looked like Mickey Mantle until he swung the bat. But he made pretty good money on that advertising that they did, you know, with the beer.
Yeah.
But
so you played again with Richie Ashburn?
Yeah, he was our center fielder, my roommate.
Yeah. How did you think of him as a player?
Oh, Richie was
really solid.
He was a solid player, you know. I remember when I used to play against him when I was at Pittsburgh. I'd go way, as a third baseman, I'd go way in. He looked at me, he said, get back there. He said, we're not playing Little League. I said, well, you hit the ball by me. but he was a great guy.
Gene Woodling.
Gene was another super guy. I mean, you know, you could sit down and talk to him. He was from the old school. Okay. And I like to talk to him. I mean, the coaches we had there.
Oh, yeah, that was tell us about Rogers Hornsby.
I used to pick his brain in the hotel lobby every day when we were on the road. Okay. Yeah. That's what I did then. I picked Ted Williams' brain, Roger Hornsby, Honus Wagner.
Oh, you met Honus Wagner.
Yeah, he was with the Pirates when I was there.
Tell us what he was like.
He had hands like a shovel. I mean, big.
Was he affable, pleasant guy?
Oh, yeah. You know, he lived in Carnegie.
Right, Carnegie, yeah. I know.
Yeah, he was a great guy. Super guy.
Boy, there's not very many people that remember, you know, being coached by Honus Wagner.
Yeah, that's right.
So they also had Cookie Lavaggetto, I think, and
Cookie Lavaggetto,
Red Ruffing.
And then you had Solly Hemus.
Solly Hemus, yeah. He just managed the Cardinals.
Red Ruffing, the pitcher from the Yankees.
Yeah.
Okay. All great guys, okay.
Then but, Stengel,
you know, Casey Stengel. I don't care who you have, you know, as a coach, you know, or a manager, they can't hit the ball for you. They can't field for you. They can't throw the ball for you. You know, they can teach you, but the problem with coaches today, and I always said this, sister tried to change me, and I said, George, the Pirates signed me as I was. How I hit, how I threw the ball, how I fielded. Why are you trying to change me as far as hitting is concerned when I'm not a Punch and Judy hitter? I'm a power hitter.
So George Sisler, we're talking about.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was the old St. Louis Browns first baseman.
I picked his brain too because this is what he tried to do with me.
So he tried to change your hitting style.
He wanted me to hit to all fields, okay? And I said, I'm a power hitter, okay? Now, their coach's theory is this. If I change you and you don't go good, it's because you didn't listen. But if you did go good, then it was because of what I said. You know, and at the back of my mind, I said, George, you're not going to change me. I'm not going to do it because I know the power hitter I am.
And what was his reaction to that?
Yeah. Say nothing.
Yeah. So, overall, then, the Mets had Casey Stengel. So yeah. What can you tell us about Casey Stengel?
He forgot more baseball than I'll ever know. I can't say too much about Casey because I was in the field all the time. But some of the things that on the bench, I can remember one time, we had a man on first and second in the sixth inning. And I said, Casey, Solly's looking down. What do you want him to do? He said, you want him to bunt? He says, no. He says, we're going to surprise him. We're not going to bunt this time. And another time, okay, I had just come off a record of hitting 6 home runs in 3 consecutive games, August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And I was wearing these yellow glasses, okay, that were good when it's cloudy. And
like a Polaroid,
right, where it made the field bright as can be, okay, so you could see very well. I hit the first home run, okay, and I hit the second home run, one game, first game, and I come into the dugout, and Casey says, where'd you get those glasses? I says, Gene Mott, the trainer, gave them to me. He says, you tell him to order gross for the rest of the players. And another time, I'm hitting. Okay, and they had a sign in the left field foul line and the right field foul line with a boat on it. And whoever hit the boat the most time at the end of the year would win the boat. Okay, so I'm a pull hitter. Okay, and I'm hitting this one time, and the ball goes foul. And I hear Casey yell, if you want a boat, join the Navy. I laugh and I, you know, stepped out, got my bearings again. But I should have won the boat, okay, because I hit the most time. But they gave it to Richie Ashburn.
So it sounds like playing on that team was kind of fun for you.
Oh, yeah. You know, we lost, like I said, we lost every which way you'd ever want to lose a ball game. You name whatever it is, we lost it. Okay. We didn't have any relief pitching. If we had had the long man and the closer and the short man like they had today, we'd be right in there.
Yeah,
we scored a lot of runs.
Pretty decent starters, Roger Craig.
He lost over 20.
Yeah,
Jackson lost over 20. Yeah.
He just passed away recently.
Yeah, he did.
Jay Hook, Bob Miller. So, yeah, that was quite a season. So you had that excellent 62 season and came back 63. And again, it was a solid year. You had 15 home runs, 60 RBI, hit 260, and then 60.
Well, the reason for that is I was in San Francisco, and Bob Bowen, pitcher, 3-0 on me and throws behind me. In my elbow. Take me to the doctors. I walked out of mine. I said, "You ever do that again?" I said, "I'll kill you." I said it to him. And took me to the hospital. Got out of my arm. I get back home. And I got the staphylococcus bug on my testicle swelled up about that big. Played a doubleheader, okay, on Sunday, and I had we played Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday morning, this is when it swelled up, and I called the trainer. He says, "Get to the hospital right away." So I went to the hospital, and they put me in bed. And they just put tons and tons of blankets on me, okay, to try to break the whatever it was, okay. And I missed 41 games. That's why I didn't have much of a year.
I mean, you played hurt a lot of this time, and you still had put together pretty good numbers for someone that was hurt.
My 42nd game that after I got out of hospital, my 42nd day that I got out of hospital, we're playing the Cardinals. Kurt Simmons is pitching. Cardinals are winning 2-1, bottom of the ninth. One man on base. Casey says, "Thomas, can you hit? I haven't had a bat in my hand for 41 days. I said, "I'll do the best I can." Simmons got the count to 3-2, and I hit the ball out of the ballpark. Won the ball game 3-2.
Oh, that's awesome.
After 41 games of not handling a bat, and can come back and hit a home run. Okay. When I was 70 years old, in an old timers game, I hit a home run off of Virgil Trucks. And this is funny, because the kid that was the guy who would bring the players back for old timers games every year said to me as I wanted to play, it sure was nothing. He said, "We're only going to play 3 innings. He says, "You hit a home run." He said, "I'll bring it back next year." I said, "Okay." So Roger throws the ball and I hit it out of the ballpark. So he invited me back the next year. But little things like that, you know, they stick with you. And I've had a great baseball career.
You sure have.
Good Lord's been good to me. He's given me a good body. I took care of it. I didn't have very many injuries, okay, except for the thumb and the hospital. That's probably, and some, you know, the hamstrings. I played with hamstrings because they tied me up with around the waist and up in there to where I wasn't full speed, but still I was able to play. I loved the game.
Well, in 64, you were still with the Mets, and in August, you were traded to the Phillies.
I was traded to the Phillies. They were a half a game lead. I took them to a 6.5 game lead within a month, hitting a lot of home runs in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, winning ball games for them.
Yeah, you did great. 294 average, 7 home runs in that time, 26 RBI, and they had a late season collapse that... Maybe you could tell us about how that happened.
I broke my thumb in September with 10 games left to play. And
how'd that happen?
The ironic thing about the whole thing, it was a makeup game with the Dodgers. You get an off day. We got to play. I was on second base. Morty Wills is a shortstop. I had to pick off playoff. I slid back. I went back in the second base. My hand went underneath the bag and hit the pin where they put the bag in. Okay. I broke it back here. Okay. And I had two more hits with a broken
thumb. Does that still bother you, by the way?
No. With a broken thumb. Okay. I had two more hits. I put a bucket of ice and I put it in between innings. And I go up and hit the next time, get a base hit. And I go home that night. And I told the guy at the Warwick Hotel, bring me up one of those big cans, fill it up with ice. I put my hand in it all night. Woke up in the morning, all puffed up like that. So I go to call the trainer. He says, go to the hospital. Went to the hospital. And I said to the doctor, I said, Doc, this is as close as I'm going to get to World Series. Do me a favor, okay? Just give me a little shot of Novocaine to where I still have, you know, feeling for the ball, okay, to where I can throw it. He said, no, I won't do it. I said, Doc, I says, I'm willing to do it because of what the future has for me, okay? Still wouldn't do it. So they put a cast on. Now I could hit, okay? Hit the ball out of the ballpark with a cast on, okay? But I couldn't throw. So I'm taking batting practice. I go around third base, Mark's over. He said, well, what do you think? I said, Gene, I can hit, but if an important play comes up that I have to make a throw at the home plate, I said, I won't be able to do it. From that time on, he never talked to me. He's a funny man. He's a great baseball man, but if you're playing regular with him, for him, he'll talk to you. If you want to play regular, sitting on the bench, very seldom he'll talk to you. Strange.
So some of the what happened then with the team? I know you were pulled from them, but still, for them to they had
I was
a
on a radio show every morning, and I said, "Oh, they'll win." Well, you know, his theory was, let's pitch Bunning in short with 3 days rest, and let's win it, and then give the players a rest. Well, it backfired because after he gave Bunning in short the 4 days rest, the last two games we won.
Who else did they have on their pitching staff?
They had Mahaffey.
Art Mahaffey, yeah.
Green.
Dallas
Green,
yeah.
Yeah. They had Roebuck.
Oh, Ed Roebuck, yeah. So it was a misguided strategy to just concentrate on those guys.
You had, the guy just turned 93 years old, Bobby Shantz.
Oh, Bobby Shantz, yeah.
Had,
he just turned 94. Wow.
That was his thinking.
And so when that was happening, what were you thinking all this time?
I said, no. They went out and they got a first baseman from Cleveland. And he didn't pan out at all. In fact, he hurt the club. But one of those unfortunate things, you know, you have the hand, World Series handed to you and take it away from you at the same time.
That was a really tough break. Literally.
It was. But, and I went back for the 25th anniversary union, you know, the union. And people were asking him questions. He said, why did you pitch Bunning in short? And, you know, he said, people are always saying, because I pitched Bunning in short. He said, that wasn't why we lost. He said, there's a reason right there. Pointed to me. He says, he don't hurt his thumb, break his thumb. He says, we win the pennant down him. He gave me credit for that.
And, yeah, that's really a shame.
And then the next year, it just fizzled out with the problem with Richie.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, before we get to Richie Allen, any thoughts of Johnny Callison, Wes Covington, fellas like that?
Johnny Callison, great hitter, okay? He came to an old-timers game here in Pittsburgh, and Johnny drank an awful lot, you know. And I said to him, Johnny, you're going to kill yourself. stop. He said, mind your own business. I walked away, and that was the end of my conversation with him. Covington, great hitter off the bench, okay? He's the one who stuck up for me when the incident happened between me and Richie Allen. You know, it was an unfortunate thing, not my fault, but he stuck up for me.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, the Richie Allen incident that happened. Now, Richie was,
You take it from there. I mean, I think you knew what happened. You know.
Well, this is for
I mean,
the...
You've never read anything about it?
I have, but this is for the history.
No, I'm not going to say anything more about it. I mean, it's just an unfortunate thing that happened that wasn't my fault. Okay, it happened in batting practice when I bunted the ball down. I was with the rinky-dinks. I wasn't playing regular. So I
what were the rinky-dinks?
Well, the ones that weren't playing regular.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah.
And they take batting practice first. So I bunted down third, and him and Callison were down there, and he yelled, that's 21 hours too late. You know, after the ball game that night before. And I bunted and I struck out. And then I bunted the next day in batting practice, and they told me, he said, 21 hours too late. And then... He said, what'd you say? I said, well, when it was your time to hit us, I'll be more than happy to tell you what I said. So he came down. I rubbed dirt in my hand, rubbed it on the bat, turned away, turned this way, and bopped me. Sucker punched me. And that was it. And they said I swung the bat, and if I would have hit him, I'd have probably killed him. I hit him in the shoulder. I don't remember doing that. Because when you get hit like I hit, you don't remember things. Okay. And I spit in blood running out in the outfield. I came in the clubhouse and I went over to him. I said, Richie, regardless of what you did to me, I'm sorry. I said, I don't remember what I did. And he said, get away from me. And that was it. And Covington, as I'm walking out to go to the game, Covington said, and I said, well, I lost my job. And I said, I probably won't be here. He said, if they do that to you, I'm going to come up and say to the writers, it wasn't your fault. I was right there, okay? And you did nothing wrong. And he did. And after the ball game, I got put in the eighth inning, pinch hit, hit a home run, tied the ball game up. And then we lost it in the 10th inning. And after the game was over, Mark called me up and I was shaving. I seen him coming. I said, well, here it is. I took me upstairs. I told the trainer to get downstairs. He said, we just put you on irrevocable waivers, which means we cannot claim you back, but you're going to go to a ball club. And my answer to him was, you're being very unfair to me. And his answer to me was, he's 22, 24, whatever he was, and you're 35. That was it. So I lost my job. I lost my time in baseball, which I could have probably still played till I was 40 because I was in great shape. But wasn't in the books, so that was it.
Have you ever seen or talked to him since?
Saw him in Reading at an old-timers game. I had my uniform on. I was walking out to the field. He was coming in. He grabbed me, hugged me. He said, I know it's been bothering you. It's been bothering me. Okay. I thought it was all over. Well, just last year, I got a paper from New York. He blamed me for everything because he was trying to get in the Hall of Fame.
So, on July 10, 1965, you were sold to the Houston
right.
Astros. And that was, Paul Richards was the GM at that time, and I always heard he was a pretty decent manager, and you were managed by Lum Harris.
Right.
Looks like you played in 23 games, and You didn't have you hit 3 home runs with 9 RBIs in that period. They were still, you know, an expansion team that were still trying to grow.
You know, what's funny about that. My last hit with the Phillies was a home run. My last hit with Houston was a home run. And on August 31st, they sold me to Milwaukee.
Yeah, so you went back to the Braves again, this time for Bobby Bregan again.
Yeah. And then that winter, I got a letter from Mikhail, told me to sign. And I says, if you're not going to give me an opportunity to win the job, then forget about it. I'm just going to sit at home and forget. My career's over. He said, oh, no, he said, we'll give you a good chance. We'll give you a good chance. Well, I was in great shape. Great shape. I don't get to play ball in spring training. That's the man that says we're going to give you a great chance. Okay. So I talked to Bobby Bregan. I said, why? He didn't give me an answer. And I knew the writing was on the wall. So I thought I was going to go to, because I was talking to Billy Herman, who was there at that particular game. And he said, I think you're going to go with me to Boston. I said, oh boy, that would be a great park for me. And I said, I will help you tremendously. But they wanted to protect a couple of their youth, so that was it. That was the end of my career.
So you think that at that point your age was just working against you at that point as far as...
Yeah, because the average life any major league ball player, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, or baseball, is only 3.5 to 4.5 years. Because you're bringing everybody up, bring them up for a cup of coffee, they're in the picture, and you divide and all this stuff. So, but I was very fortunate. I played 6.5 years, great, great, great time. I loved it. It's not a glamorous life like a lot of people think that it is. Okay, you're away a lot, but I was very fortunate. I played 8 years here in Pittsburgh when I was home half the season.
Well, then, when you were with the Braves, you finished off the 65 season, and they released you.
Right.
And then you signed on in the spring with the Cubs in 66.
Right. DeRosa called me. Right.
Yeah.
I played 5 games.
5 games.
And right. then they said, I want you to go to Tacoma, Washington, and learn how to become a coach. Okay. And I said, fine. I'd be more than happy to do that. And I get down there. They play me one day, rest me 4 days. I said, why? I said, they told me they wanted me to come down and become a coach. I said, if you're going to play me every day. I said, I can't play one day and rest 4. I said, I'm not that type of ball player. I'm not that type of hitter. I have to play regular. Okay. They wouldn't do it, so they didn't release me. And that was it.
So then... So you were essentially at the end of the baseball career at this point. Did you try to latch on then afterwards?
Or? I wrote 25 letters to 25 ball clubs. How many replies do you think I got?
5. Did the Pirates ever contact you again?
And
it's a shame. I would have loved to see you play here again.
Managers from the Dodgers.
Walt Alston?
No, after him.
Tommy Lasorda.
Yeah, Tommy Lasorda. Saw me old timers game in New York. He said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. I said, I would like to get back into baseball as a coach or something. He says, why didn't you call me? I said, well, I can still call you. I said, I can still write to you. 5 years I wrote to him. After the 5th year, he says they hire within. Lied to me. Okay.
Is that, one of the questions was, did you have interest in coaching or managing?
Yeah. I knew so nothing else.
Yeah.
What was I going to do? I'm a big, strong kid. Okay. I mean, I could, work on a lawnmower and stuff like that, do landscaping and stuff like that, but I didn't know. Education, only 4.5 years of high school, and that's it.
And when you look back at your career, in what way do you think you changed the most as a ball player from when you started in 1951 to when you finished in 1966?
In what way did I change? What way
as a player, did you, if you compare Frank Thomas of 1951 to Frank Thomas in 1966?
Well, you improve every year, because you're getting older and smarter, and you know things. I mean, I studied the pitchers. I mean, on the bench. I mean, the way they gab today and stuff like that. I never did that. I sat on the bench and I watched the pitcher. Watch the way he pitches in certain situations and knew that how he was going to be pitching me.
Did you keep a book of any sort or notes? What was your favorite ballpark and what was your least favorite one?
I loved the Polo Grounds because I was a pool hitter, but all of my home runs in the Polo Grounds were over the roof. Okay, not in the stands. Okay, and I love Chicago. I love Milwaukee. Okay, if I'd have played my whole career in those ballparks, I'd hit 50 home runs a season. Cincinnati was tough. St. Louis was tough. Okay, but I did well in Los Angeles because they had the short porch. When they first went out there, I'm second. Wally Moon hit the most home runs there, and I'm the second most home runs there. San Francisco, I had one of my better days there, where I came to bat four times with the bases loaded.
What was the stadium there? What was that? What they called?
Stadium.
Seal Stadium. Yeah,
yeah. That was a good park to hit in, and I could have driven in 14 or 15 runs, but I only ended up with 7.
Do you have any one particular single memory that stays with you the most when you think back on your whole career? Is there any?
Just putting on a major league uniform and staying as long as I did in the major leagues. I mean, that's all that it is. I mean, that tells it all in one sentence. Because it was my boyhood dream, my dream came true.
We're going to talk about an all-time team and go through positions and tell me who, and the players that you played with in your time were players that you saw play.
That's pretty tough to do.
Yeah, like catcher, through all the positions, and who sticks out in your memory as the an all-time team for you?
Playing against me?
Playing with you or against you? The people that you played, during your time in the majors.
Let's go to the next one.
Okay. So first base, or do you want to go to the next question?
No, the next player.
Okay. First baseman.
Musial played first base. He was great.
Sure was.
Second base, I'd have to pick Mass.
Sure. Shortstop.
Shortstop? I'd probably have to take... Roy McMillan.
Yeah. Wow. Third base. I know the answer to that one, I think.
Third base.
Frank Thomas.
No. I'd have to go with either Eddie Matthews or Boyer from St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. Ken Boyer.
Yeah.
Left field.
Left field. There's a lot of left fielders. Can't think of the ones I want to think of.
Okay, center field.
Well, it was Vader Pinson. Good. Ashburn was good. Verdon was good. Verdon covered a lot of ground. Verdon played deep. He came in very well, okay. Pearsall played in, great center fielder, and ran back. I'd have to take Pearsall as the one for that, because I played against him in the Southern Association when he played for Birmingham. and we became pretty good friends. Right field, probably Cremeni. Great right fielder, played the wall pretty good in Pittsburgh. Pitchers?
Yeah, we have you can go with a right-hander and a left-hander. Then a relief pitcher.
Well, I'd have to go with Koufax, okay, for left-hander.
Mm-hmm.
Or Spahn, okay. And I'd Drysdale because he was tough on me.
Oh, yeah.
No. But then, when, you know, and so was Bob Gibson. But, you know, you hit your home runs off these guys, but, you know, you make more outs. You know, they always talk about all the players that hit 300, okay? Okay. A 300 hitter is only one extra base hit a day.
Isn't that amazing? Or a week, isn't it? Something,
a week, something like that, right. Okay. They talk about the players that have 3,000 hits, but no one ever says anything about the 10,000 outs they made. And that's true.
That is true.
But,
and then you had some players that were really good with getting on base with walks, like Eddie Yost. He could get on with.
Well, Brock was a good left center fielder.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Even and when he moved over to left field, he was a good left fielder too.
All the players you mentioned, they're all just fantastic players.
Right. You know, if you're going to take fielding and hitting. You know, you have to go with Frank Robinson with Cincinnati, a left fielder and power hitter and stuff like that. You know?
Sure.
But back then, players played together.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not doing that today. They're all swinging for the fences because that's where the money is.
That's exactly where we're going next. We have one last position. That's relief pitcher.
Relief pitcher. Oh, you have to go with the guy with the Yankees. Number one, Elroy.
Oh, yeah.
Elroy's got 18 straight wins. Yeah. Never broken.
Isn't that amazing? 18-1 in 1959.
And the reason, because when he came in, he threw strikes.
Yeah.
He says, I got seven players behind me and one in front of me. He said, I'm going to let them work. That was his theory.
Yeah.
And people ask him, I don't know whether you ask him that question or not, what's the difference between a forkball and a slider?
Oh, yeah, slider.
He says, money. You never asked him that question?
No. He showed me his fingers, his fingers played out like, they went like this.
Right. But that's what his answer was, money.
Okay, so we're going to ask you about today's game a little bit, your assessment of it. Do you still follow baseball?
Yes.
Give us your impressions of today's game. You've said some things along
like
the way.
I told you, the way if you're a good hitter, you can hit right and left-hand pitching. But they don't give you the chance to do that today unless you're a pretty good. Even the power hitters they take out. And to me, that's wrong. Okay? If you're a good hitter, you can hit anybody. And if you're not a good hitter, then they have to do that.
Are complete games a thing of the past?
Absolutely. Because they tell you, going to give me six strong innings. I've never seen so many Tommy John surgeries as there are today, and they're going to continue to do that. And what they're doing is they're hurting the pitcher more. I used to talk to Bob Feller, Robin Roberts, Koufax, Drysdale, Jim Hearn. Sal Magley, Bob Rush, Harvey Haddix. Rick Russell. Do you throw hard on every pitch? No. Only when I had to. You mix up speeds, you're a better pitcher.
Like an example, like Bobby Chance. He mixed them all up.
Right. Harvey Haddix was tough for me to figure out, although I hit 9 home runs against him. Okay, I hit 9 home runs against him. I hit 9 home runs against Newcomb. Newcomb says that Mays and me were the two toughest right-hand hitters for him to face. But Harvey Haddix if you hit a homer off of his fastball, you would see his fastball again, but not for a strike. And then if you hit his curveball for a home run, you would see the curveball, but not for a strike, and then he'd switch back to the fastball. Okay, because he figured you're looking for that.
He's a smart pitcher.
Right. Yeah. So I was a smart hitter. Erskine, like I told you, he threw me 17 straight curveballs in Pittsburgh. And he said, figured himself, we got him now, and I'm going to throw a fastball. He threw a fastball and hit it out of the ballpark. He came in the clubhouse after. He said, don't you look for anything but fastball? I said, no. I can adjust anything else. Okay? But if I'm looking for a curveball and you throw a fastball, I'm in the hospital. It's that simple. So why wouldn't you look for just a fastball all the time? Pittsburgh's a fastball hitting club. Okay? But I've never seen so many hitters take a third strike right down the middle.
Do you see too much emphasis on home runs?
Today,
Yes.
Because that's where the money is. I mean, you got the third baseman playing a shortstop position. You got the whole side of the diamond where all you have to do is bump the ball past the pitcher. You got a base hit. They don't do that because they want to get the big money.
Is there any way that you can see to shorten the game, quicken the pace?
I say this. Let the game be played the way it should be played and you won't have any problems. You know.
I want to tell you something while we're talking about this. I watched a recording of a recent game. It was an old YouTube video. It was the 1952 World Series game with the Dodgers and the Yankees. And I'm telling you, what struck me was those batters would get up and they were ready.
That's right.
Pitcher, throw the ball. Ball. They get it right back. Huh. Now, you know, when I interviewed Jim Cott, he told me as a broadcaster, he says there was 25 minutes of a game taken up just with batters adjusting their. And you know,
we never used gloves. I never used a glove in my life batting.
I know. Where's the balance of today's game, do you think? Is it with the players, the owners, fans? I mean, who's got the control of the game?
Well, actually, the players have the upper hand as far as that's concerned because of their pension. They're never going to go back to what the owners want anymore. No way.
Who are you following in today's current crop of players? Is there anybody that you have eyes on?
Yeah, I like Trout. I think he's a great ball player. He can do everything. He's like Mays was, okay? He can do all five things. There's not too many ball players that can do that. And that's the type of player he is. I like him very well, very much.
Say of those five things, which ones do you think you did really well of those five basic talents?
Well, I had a great arm. Okay. A good batter. Good fielder. What else is there?
Run.
I was average runner. Okay. Didn't steal many bases. I think I had 15 in my career. But you never run. You never have to steal bases when you hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And fielding, I didn't make too many errors in the outfield. I made more of my errors when I moved in to play infield.
Mm-hmm.
But I had great hands. Very fortunate.
So, what kind of work did you do after leaving baseball?
I worked for a business school for 18 years. Never missed a day. Used to go to the high schools, talk education to kids, tell them don't make the same mistake as I did. If you're in sports and you're lucky enough, you'll play no more than until you're 37 years old. What are you going to do for the next 38 years till you retire at 65? Good advice.
Now, did you and your family live the whole time in Pittsburgh? You have a house here?
Yeah. Well, we never moved.
Well, tell us a little bit about your family. Well, your wife and children?
My wife, we had 8 kids, 4 boys, 4 girls. 7 living, 1 deceased. 1's a priest. The oldest is 65, gonna be 66. And then 64. And then the one that was killed would have been 62. And Frankie's 61. Peter's 59. Marianne is 57. Paul is 55. And Mark just going to turn 50.
So your kids were fairly close together then. Yeah. I mean, they all get along well. And
my wife loved kids. We had 10.
What was your wife's name?
Dolores. I called her Dodo. Okay, she had 10 pregnancies. We lost 2.
I heard you say earlier that she passed away 7 years ago. I'm sorry to hear that.
Her whole family. Her dad had melanoma cancer. Her mother had vaginal cancer. Her sister had brain cancer. And then she had pancreatic cancer. The whole family.
And how have you found life after her passing? Was it difficult for you?
The first 2 years I wouldn't do nothing. And it got to a point where I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And I said, good dear Lord, send me to somebody or send somebody to me. And he did. He sent the lady who is a lot younger than me right now. But if it wasn't for her today, I wouldn't be here today. It's in great.
And what's her name?
Her name's Ramona. I mean, what time is it? Is it time?
It's 3:20.
Well, she should be coming home pretty soon. But I said she's a lot younger. I mean, I was in great, great shape until I hit 82. I remember when the big coach from Westinghouse, you know, got up at a banquet one time and said, all my family was in great shape until they hit 80. And then nuts and bolts all start falling apart. And this is true. Okay, I was in great, great shape until I hit 82. Now, 82, and I had the left hip replacement. Then I had the cataracts. Then I had the hearing aids. And then I had the right hip replaced. Then I had sepsis, blood infection, and to this day they still don't know. I was in intensive care for 6 days. Never had so much blood taken out of me in 6 days. Still haven't found out what caused it. Okay? Got hit in the mouth with a golf ball. I had 2 teeth knocked out. And what else did I have? And then the last thing I had was I had a pain in the cheek of my ass. Okay? And went to the doctor, because he said, well, maybe it's because of the hip replacement, right hip replacement, maybe something happened. So I went there and he took an x-ray. He says, your hip's fine. He says, but he says, you have tendonitis in the cheek of your fanny. Never heard of it. He says, like a tennis elbow. Okay. He says, I could give you a shot, but I won't because it's too close to the bone. I don't want you to get an infection. So I'll send you to a radiologist, which he did. Gave me a shot 2 weeks later, still felt the same way. He said, well, let's go for therapy. I went for therapy for 12 weeks. After 12 weeks, I went to my primary doctor. And he said, how are you feeling? He said, did that help you, the 12 weeks? I said, not really. He said, well, let's go for more therapy. I said, time. I said, I know my body. I says, and all you want to do is therapy and let somebody make money. I says, I'm coming to you to asking you. You're telling me you're the professor, and you should know these things, okay? What is the cause of this? Why is it doing that? I thought it was my psychiatric going down my leg, but that usually goes away after 2 or 3 days. But this one stayed with me for 2.5 weeks. So he got smart with me. So I'm changing my primary doctor now because of that. It used to be, when I used to go to him when he first started, okay, he'd sit down and talk to me like you and I are talking, okay. Take blood out of you, weigh you, okay. Put the stethoscope on your heart and on your back. Put the tongue depressor down your throat. Look at your ears, look at your eyes, look at your nose. Tap your ankle, tap your knee, okay. They don't do that anymore. Okay, they call you in 15 minutes, you're out of there. Give you a pill for $250. I said, I want more than that for what I'm paying you. And so he won't do it. So I said, see you later.
So you got
and I've been with him a long time. Okay, when the guy who used to own the place.
They got a new PCP now.
Pardon me?
You have a new PCP
I'm
now.
I'm going to see him the end of this month.
Yeah, good.
I mean, I get my flu shots every year. I go to all my doctors. I go to my prostate doctor. I go to my heart doctor. I go to my... everything, okay? Religiously. I'm in pretty good shape. I might live to 100, they tell me.
I don't see why not.
Well, you never know. Only the man upstairs knows what's going to happen.
I contacted, the first person I contacted when I started to do this this work was Wally Westlake.
Okay.
And he's passed 19. Away. I mean, I left him a message with his son. And about a month later, his son called me and said that he had passed away. He was 99, or 98, almost. 99.
He was 97.
Yeah.
He was 97 in the sheet that I have. He might have been 98.
Yeah, 98.
Now, there's a list that I have.
Yeah.
From 100 down,
mm-hmm.
I'm 88. Now, I'm going to go up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he died. Newcomb died. Hetke died. Okay, and they were above me.
Yeah, there's a few on that list. I'd like to talk with Kurt Simmons.
Yeah.
I want to try to see him.
And Robin Roberts.
Oh. Robin Roberts has passed
away. Yeah, passed away too.
But anyway, so what are your favorite hobbies and outside interests?
I don't have any hobbies but answering my fan mail. And I do that religiously. I'm probably one of a few ball players that writes a thank you note to everybody that asks for my autograph that donates to my charity.
That's excellent. So what do you believe is the most important contribution that you've made to the game of baseball?
Well, the contribution is because I love the game of baseball and I talk baseball to fans and I have fans. I have a little boy who was 9 years old from Scranton, Pennsylvania, that is now 73 years old and writes to me consistently. He's a minister now. I have another boy that called me and asked me if I'd have dinner with them at the Cracker Barrel out on Parkway. They're coming to Pittsburgh for the ball game. And I said yes. And while I'm talking to him, I'd ask him, how are you doing in schoolwork? Are you having any problem with any subject? And he said, yes, I'm having trouble with math. I said, well, do me a favor. I want you to bring your math book every home, every night. And I want you to start from page one. Page one every night, guys. You know, and you do that. Every single night, because the more you do it, the better you're going to become at it. And then after your second or third report card, I want you to write me and tell me, you know, how you're doing. So after his second report card, he wrote me a letter and he says, guess what, Mr. Thomas, I made an A in math. I said, well, I'm taking credit for that. These are the things that I think are missing with the players today. I don't think they communicate with the fans. I was always great to the fans. I never refused to sign a kid's autograph because I remember what it did to me when they passed me by and wouldn't do it. And I vowed, I said, I will never pass up a kid. I had the reputation, Steve, that out of every clubhouse, as soon as I would come out, as long as they would line up, I would stay there until everyone was finished. My wife was in a car at that time with 8 kids for 2 hours. When somebody tried to crash the line, I said, at the end. Because when they crowded around you, you ink all over you and stuff like that. As long as they lined up, I stayed there. The one time, a little girl came up, and she was, I think, third from the end. And she says, "Mr. Thomas, would you sign 3 cards for me?" Actually, I'd be more than happy to. And after I signed the third one, I said, "Can I ask you a question? Why did you want my autograph 3 times?" She said, "Well, now I can trade it for Roberto Clemente." I said, "Oh, okay." But, you know, I kid around with the fans, okay, good to them. And I think it's all paid off. I think that's why the good Lord wants me to stay here, because of what I'm doing for charity. I really do. And I appreciate it.
Who was the most influential person in your life?
My Uncle Mike. I was 5 years old. He's the one that, and then Lenny Levy.
That was your dad's brother or your mother's brother?
My mother's brother. And he used to catch with me all the time. And Lenny Levy used to be with the Pirates, a Jewish boy, had a car dealership.
Car dealership, yeah. I remember.
And he'd always talk to me, and he'd be coaching third base, and he'd say, "Quick with the hands, quick with the hands, quick with the hands," and that just stuck with me. And it made me think, okay? And he was very instrumental, okay, in that life.
Do you have any advice to aspiring ball players?
Yeah, I tell every kid, I says, practice more than you actually play. If you're a third baseman, take 150, 200 ground balls a day, because in a ball game, you're only going to have 2 or 3. So how are you going to improve? Take different ground balls, same with an outfielder. Spring training, I'd be the last one to leave the field, because I'd run the coaches wild, because they would keep hitting to me. But I was very dedicated to the game, because it was something I always wanted to do, and the good Lord gave me that opportunity, and it all panned out well.
It sure did. So the last question I have, or do you have any final thoughts as you look back on your life and career that you haven't already given?
I wouldn't do anything over than what I did. I just let it just play its way the same way, because it was a good way. And if I could go into the clubhouse and say to myself after every game, I gave 100%. I didn't care what anybody said, because I gave 100%. Sometimes 110%.
Well, you know, I don't think anybody could ask anymore.
No.
And I think that the career that you've put together over 16 years, and you were an outstanding baseball player. And we are so fortunate that we've had the benefit of your experience here and talking. You've really told us some really wonderful stories, and I really do indeed appreciate your time and what you've given to this game.
Just imagine, in 1962, August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, okay, 2 home runs in 3 consecutive games. The 7th game was a double, first game of a doubleheader against Cincinnati, just missed one, and hit one in the 14th inning. So I could have had 8 home runs in 4 games. I don't think that record would ever been broken.
And I don't You've know been up there with Dale Long. And that,
well,
that it, record.
They had eight
yeah,
consecutive.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's when eight days, eight mm-hmm. games. Mm-hmm. Okay, but this is in just 4 games. Okay.
That's amazing.
I have records that I don't think it's ever been broken. I don't think that home run record's ever been broken. Let me show you the picture.
Okay. Well, thanks. I think we're all done now.